October 25, is that correct? Monday, we're dealing with the end of chapter 12. And actually, I've started a, I'm going to start, well, an intermediate thing. It's called, it's whenever modern, quote, modern evolutionary science catches up with us creationists. Here's the title of something I just saw this weekend. Why Complex Life Probably Evolved Only Once is the title of that. And so my response to that is, really? You think? Only once? Their supposition here is that the bacterium, there's a size-volume relationship to life. And that in order to have enough genes to be complex, that the volume, to hold all the genes and proteins necessary to become more complex, the volume of the bacteria had to get larger, which means you had a limitation with the surface area relative to the volume. Therefore, the bacteria came in to provide, you know, the lucky gulp theory of having a bacteria being engulfed by another living organism, and the bacteria eventually became the mitochondria. They said that was probably a requirement for life to become more complex. One of the pull quotes here, the basic principle is universal. Even aliens need mitochondria is their thing here. And, of course, they say that's likely to have happened only once. Really? Only once? And then chaos theory of evolution. Forget the findings of laws of evolution. And allow me, I apologize for quoting them directly. It says here, forget the finding of laws of evolution. The history of life is just one damn thing after another. Which means that what they're saying is, and here's the pull quote, the link between environmental change and evolutionary change is weak, not what Darwinists might have predicted. And the first paragraph says here, in 1856, geologist Charles Lyell wrote to Charles Darwin with a question about fossils. Puzzled by types of mollusk that abruptly disappeared from the British fossil record, apparently in response to glaciation, only to reappear 2 million later, completely unchanged, he asked of Darwin, be so good as to explain all this in your next letter. Do you like how they wrote that? Be so good. Darwin never did, and they still can't. They still can't. Why don't mollusks, if glaciation was occurring and their evolutionary response should be to glaciation, why don't mollusks in the fossil records begin to grow hair for insulation? I don't know. They didn't. Oh, well. Enough of that. Okay, so you've got more pressing activities to deal with, and that's the understanding of this particular enzyme. Now, we're going to go finish. We went through this once. We're going to continue this again. Whoa, come back here. Boom, 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 boom. All right. So now, this enzyme is called glycogen phosphorylase. I want you to look at the figure with intelligence and say, oh, there's four different configuration conformational possibilities in this diagram. We have one enzyme with four different pools, four different types that it can exist as. All right? So this is one enzyme with four different configurations / conformations. The first configuration is that it can either be phosphorylated or not phosphorylated. The other conformation is it can either be in the T form or as the R form. You can have all four possibilities exist in a pool of, say, let's call it 100 molecules, just to make a nice round number, of glycogen phosphorylase. If it's not phosphated, the majority of the pool will be in the T inactive form. If it is phosphorylated, the majority of it will be in the phosphorylated active form. So phosphorylation tends to activate the enzyme. That's a covalent configurational change. But it's also under important allosteric controls. that if you have it unphosphorylated, but you have high levels of cyclic AMP, it can shift that pool to the active form. Or if you have a relatively high value of the active form, high levels of ATP and G6P will shift it back to the inactive form. Matter of fact, the preferred form in this is noted by the large arrow. The preferred form of the unphosphorylated form is inactive. The preferred form of the phosphorylated is active. So we have both covalent control and allosteric control. What causes the enzyme to be phosphorylated? What's the name of that enzyme? What? Phosphorylase kinase. Now, again, the principle of life is, at the molecular level, if you have a process that turns on a process, there must be, or turns on a group of things, there must be a process that turns it off. And what is the process that turns it off? Well, it's a kind of a universal enzyme called phosphoprotein phosphatase. What does the word phosphatase mean? What does it do? Phosphatase. Cuts off phosphates. What do you think the phosphoprotein means? Is that a fairly general term, phosphoprotein? Yeah. Phosphorylase kinase is much more specific for phosphorylase or glycogen phosphorylase. So phosphorylase means glycogen phosphorylase. So, all right. Thus, under usual physiological conditions, the enzyme activity of glycogen phosphorylase is largely determined by its rate of phosphorylation and dephosphorylation. So this is a reversible process that's undergoing constant churning. There's always a low level of kinase going on, and there's always a low level of phosphatase going on. So there's constantly phosphorylated, dephosphorylated. That's to allow for rapid adaptation. Rapid adaptation. If you have been sitting sedentarily for a while studying and you decide that you're going to run around the track for a mile or two and you begin to run, the muscles immediately need high levels of carbohydrate to help produce movement within the first few minutes of movement. That means that this phosphorylase kinase is turned on quickly and moves a majority of the phosphorylase, glycogen phosphorylase, from the T form inactive to the T form active, which immediately shifts to the active phosphorylase A. And that can happen within minutes or less within your muscle cells. That can only happen if there's low levels of both going on. All right. Well, enough of that. And that's the end of this particular chapter. Now then, 3 days from today, guess what, ladies and gentlemen? I finished chapter 13. Did you get chapter 13 stuff? Did you look at the last page on chapter 13? It says, of course, what does it say in the chat? What's the metabolism quiz for the last, on page 13? What does it say that it is? Yeah, guess what that one is? That's the last one. So you have this one and one more. And you are done. And this one, fructose 2,6-bisphosphatase regulation, is a fun one. It's not very complicated, but it is. It's a very fun one. Glossary list, again, summary list. These are all beginning to decrease in size and complexity. And it's all good. It's all good. All right. Now then, there's one more that I've asked, and this I've only done this once. New, check your understanding. I want you, there is a box on page 400 called Check Your Understanding. I want you to answer all those questions. You don't have to turn it in. I don't have to verify it. But I bet you there's going to be either a multiple choice question or a short answer question on that on the test. All right? Check your understanding. It's about a segment that I wanted to talk about. We just didn't have enough time to do. Then we have homework due. That means 401, number 7, 19, and so on. Need to turn this in as well. So let's take a look at this. That means the clock starts today, so in 3 days, including today. So this is due Wednesday. This is... What? Oh, you mean I can't even start the clock on today? I can't start the clock on Monday? I didn't say that. I can't start the clock on Monday. Oh, you can't take quizzes today. Oh, well, that makes sense. You're right. I can't take a quiz today. But, all right, so the clock starts. Clock starts Tuesday, is that right? So Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, so it still ends up being Thursday. Right? Yeah, it would have been Wednesday, wouldn't it? And then the homework is going to be due Friday, even though there's nothing. Anyway, so Friday and this. Got it? Be of good cheer, ladies and gentlemen. You're actually over the hump in terms of these things. We now have gotten out after this next metabolism quiz. These next two metabolism quizzes are relatively straightforward. Be prepared, though. I'm going to be asking you questions about all of them, all the time. Okay, wonderful. Now, that's chapter 12. We're going to go on to chapter 13. I think you will thoroughly enjoy chapter 13. I know I do. Okay, biochemical signaling, ladies and gentlemen. Biochemical signaling. This is very much systems physiology. Very much systems physiology. Because, let's see here, one of the two primary protein-based hormones that are responsible for fuel regulation in your circulation, there are two hormones that are protein-based. Their names are, first one's insulin. What is its compatriot? Glucagon. The insulin-glucagon ratio is important signaling body-wide about the energy level in your blood. The energy level in your blood. I want you to note, ladies and gentlemen, why do we get fat? Why do we get fat? Why? I don't mean you guys are not fat. Why do I get fat? Why am I getting fat? There's a lot of reasons. One, fundamentally, I can't keep my mouth shut. But the other idea is this. Had you ever thought about this? Do you realize that every calorie that lands in your gut, your body tries to what? Absorb. There's no upper limit to your weight. There's no trigger that says, okay, well, we'll stop importing glucose now. Is there? Oh, we'll stop importing fat. You want to have a half a gallon of ice cream? I'm sorry, I'm only going to import 300 calories because your set point is this low and we're just not going to import it. Could your body have done that? Absolutely. When you look at the exquisite control that exists within your systems, there's absolutely no reason why your body couldn't have said to your intestinal lining, "Oop, sorry, you got enough carbohydrate in your fat in your tissues. I'm sending a signal, you're not going to absorb it." But no, the body absorbs everything that lands in your gut. So, you eat a dozen donuts because you just broke up with your girlfriend, or she broke up with you, and you're needing a little comfort food. So you go down to South Bend, and Krispy Kreme sees you coming, and they start up the machine because they know you've had a bad day in Black Rock. Anyway, so you pump up. You don't stop with the first dozen. You hit a second dozen. And it's all in your gut. But you don't. You have to understand. So every drop of carbohydrate and fat that lands in your gut, your body is going to try to absorb. There's this sudden huge bolus of carbohydrate and fat in your blood. Something's got to give. So your body responds by trying to store every little bit of it. So the insulin-glucagon ratio begins to change dramatically after it's being sensed. The sensor, what's the sensor organ for that? Pancreas. Where is the pancreas located? Right on top of the stomach. It is also in a direct line from your portal vein. Where is your portal vein? Well, it goes through the liver, but where is it? Where the portal vein actually originates? In your gut. The portal vein is what all your gut contents get emptied into. And so anything that you eat ends up in your portal vein and immediately gets transported to your pancreas and your liver. But your liver is downstream from your pancreas. The pancreas is going, all right, how much carbohydrate am I getting from the gut now? How much? And then the first dozen donuts comes in and you're going, wah! Ah! And starts dumping what in there? insulin, and the liver responds by going, whoa, and starts capturing the glucose and the fat. And immediately then, that's within seconds, transported to your muscle tissue. And it says, whoa, carbohydrate. And so it's storing it as glycogen and then fat. So the body's response is that whatever carbohydrates I'm getting, I'm going to keep. But I'm going to have to adapt quickly in my bloodstream to handle all the carbohydrate and fat coming into my gut. So all that requires biochemical signaling of a very sophisticated nature, which, of course, as we know, occurred entirely by happenstance and accident. All right. Oh, did I put the wrong one up? All that yakking at you, and I put the wrong one up. Okay. Student lecture. That would be kind of fun if we kind of stared at each other going, Oh, is this the one? No, not that one. Okay, 413 lecture. That's the one I want. Okay, bingo and bingo. All right, so signaling pathways begin with hormone binding. So we're actually now, the signal is being sent into the circulatory system and is targeting the appropriate receptors in your body. So, the binding to receptor, which transmits conformational change through the membrane of the cell to an enzyme activity within the cell that creates second messenger or initiates an enzyme cascade that then creates the cellular metabolism change or development change. Okay, let me repeat this again. The hormone circulating in the blood lands on a receptor, which transforms conformational information to the membrane to an enzyme activity inside the cell, which creates either a second messenger or initiates an enzyme cascade that then creates cellular metabolism change or development change. So you've got that process. This is the model, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to be looking at two or three different methods for doing just this. Two or three different methods for doing just this. Now let's take a look at hormones. Hormones are typically synthesized by endocrine glands that act distantly, called exocrine, locally paracrine, or self-autocrine. In other words, that, for example, the islet cells are themselves which synthesize, synthesize insulin, are themselves sensitive to insulin. There's a feedback control with that. This is designed to maintain homeostasis or respond to external events or initiate cyclic metabolism or development. We're all familiar with that. Do men have moods? Absolutely. Are those moods cyclically controlled by hormones in their bodies? Yes. We are all familiar with the fertility process for women, but men have also a cycle, but it's much flatter, but much over a longer term. But men have moods. I'm probably the moodiest guy in my household. Of course, there's only one other, I'm the only guy. So I am more moody than my wife, and I don't know why. I just am. I didn't used to think so, but I turned out to be that way. All right. All interrelated and interdependent, ladies and gentlemen. All interrelated and interdependent. When I show you a pathway and you go, wow, that's nice and complex, I showed Mr. Shull a book of pathways that make the pathways I'm showing you, and I may show you a scan or two of it, make you appreciate the fact I'm only giving you the simple version of these pathways. And these pathways are themselves interdependent. The hormones themselves can be made of polypeptides, amino acid derivatives. If you get excited and you've just asked your significant other to marry you and she says yes and your adrenaline glands get kicked in and start producing epinephrine and norepinephrine in high levels, that's an amino acid derivative, or steroids, powerful powerful developmental hormones that can have enormous effect in microgram quantities throughout your body. Hormones circulating throughout the body bind to specific receptors located on specific cells. Now, we're going to focus on the receptor, on the signal itself, on the hormone. But let me assure you, there is another level of sophistication that deals with the receptor. The receptor can have enormous power as well. You can have cell A and cell B both bind adrenaline. And yet, because of the receptor, cell A and cell B respond in exact opposites. Okay? Adrenaline lands in epinephrine hits your heart muscle and nerves. And what happens? The contractions increase and they strengthen. That same hormone hits your gut on the smooth muscles. And what happens to them? They slow down or stop. Okay? Because you don't, if you're excited and you've got to do fight or flight, you don't need to be digesting food. If you are going to be eaten by a lion, what's in your gut ain't going to matter. Okay? So that's why it shuts it down. So when you get into medical school, graduate school, dental school, you'll discover that they're probably going to focus on the receptors because they're going to assume you know about the ligands. All right, so pancreas produces digestive enzymes, contains islets of Langerhans, it's a which produce glucagon in the alpha cells, insulin in the beta cells, and somatostatin in the delta cells. We're of course going to worry about glucagon insulin. We're not going to go into the details yet. That'll come later on when we talk about overall metabolism. But these, again, are protein-based hormones that are responsible for metabolic changes due to high levels or low levels of blood glucose. Insulin stimulates muscle, liver, adipose tissue to store glucose as glycogen, protein, and fat. So I'm giving you an overall view of what insulin does. And of course, glucagon stimulates the liver to release glucose by breakdown of glycogen called glycogenolysis. The enzyme that produces glycogenolysis is called glycogen phosphorylase. It's the Pac-Man of glycogen molecules. It begins eating these things from the outside in, eating or breaking glucose at a time, starting from the non-reducing end. By the way, how many reducing ends does glycogen have? One. How many non-reducing does it have? Say thousands or tens of thousands. Yes?
You had the receptors bind to specific cells on the end of the last slide.
Well, they're part of specific cells.
Okay. Well, right.
Now, what did I say? Did I use that phrase wrong? Come on. What did I do? What do I say at the bottom? Do I say receptors bind? Is that what I said? Hormones bind to specific receptors. Yeah, go ahead. What were we going to say?
Okay, so does that mean that those specific receptor cells control other parts of the organism, or what's the case?
Specific receptors located on specific cells of, and I'll have to say this, of specific tissues.
Okay.
So a receptor a hormone is circulating through the body. You have tissues, and the majority of the cells in that tissue have a particular receptor, and it binds on there. But even within tissues that apparently have some sort of uniformity, there are subclasses of cells that respond themselves differently to the different ligands that are showing up. So a liver cell. What's nice about using liver cells in experiments is the liver cells typically can be classified as three different kinds of cell types. And so you got this big old liver that's basically made up of three cell types. And so the biochemistry and the cell biology of it is fairly straightforward. But there are other, the spleen is made up of multiple different types of cells. The pancreas is made up of all those different cell types, even in the same organ, will respond differently. Hard to know. Okay, Let's go ahead. Do you like the flashbulb effect? I was tired last night, so I came up with that. Reminds me of some sort of, or fireworks. All right. So we're just looking on overhead number 3. Glucagon stimulates liver to release glucose by breakdown of glycogenolysis and by synthesis of glucose from non-carbohydrate precursors called gluconeogenesis and release from fats from adipose tissues called lipolysis. Gluconeogenesis. We've talked about glycogenolysis. We actually haven't. That's actually, it's a single step enzyme. That's why it's a somatostatin regulates both insulin and glucagon. So I haven't investigated that response much. Adrenal glands, of course, contain 2 types of tissues, a medulla, sympathetic nervous system extension, and then the cortex, typical glandular tissue. So the adrenal glands, because this medulla is a nervous system extension, obviously, is very sensitive to the state of the nervous system from which it gains its structure, producing catecholamines. That's norepinephrine, epinephrine. This is from the medulla. And norepinephrine and epinephrine, of course, have the names noradrenaline and adrenaline. Adrenaline and noradrenaline are the old terms used in the United States. The universal system used worldwide now is epinephrine and norepinephrine. And adrenal cortex produces steroids, adrenal corticoid steroids, each bind to unique receptors, alpha, beta, adrenal receptors, responsible for energy mobilization. Again, another hormone that's designed, or class that's designed for energy mobilization, among other things. Adrenal cortex hormones, at least 50 exist that affect carbohydrate, protein, and lipid metabolism called glucocorticoids. Again, we're not going to go into details as other classes might have gone into. If you're a biology major, these will be sufficient enough for you as biochemists and as at this level. Next is excretion of salt and water, mineral corticoids, and finally sexual development, androgens and estrogens. The steroid hormones responsible for regulation of sexual differentiation, secondary sexual characteristics, and sexual behavior. Androgens that accelerate muscle growth are called anabolic steroids. Nasty little things. I thought this was an interesting thing. Embryonic males with their gonads removed become phenotypic females. This is of mammalian cells. I don't think they've done this to humans. But if you do it to other animals in which those early sexual cells are removed, then they become phenotypic females. Pituitary gland, growth hormone, human growth hormone, stimulates muscle, bone, cartilage growth, cartilage cell growth. Excess, I think I typoed this. It's supposed to be GH, not HG. I would change it now, except I'm on a roll. Okay, GH excess. If you got too much growth hormone, you get overgrowth, giantinism. You see these poor schmucks in China, you know, that they're 8 foot tall and going to live to 20 years old, and they're completely out of proportion because they're probably having this problem either genetically or because of a tumor. If you have a deficiency, you get dwarfism. That's also, there's a genetic link, so you can have families of dwarfism, dwarves. Now... What I want you to know is that this growth hormone, the receptor for that growth hormone is a particular class of growth, a particular class of receptor. It's perhaps one of the more sophisticated receptors. Pardon me. The receptor exists as a monomeric unit when it's unbound to the ligand. Exists as a monomeric unit when it's unbound to the ligand, but when the hormone binds to it, it dimerizes or dimerizes. It gets 2 of them. Let's take a look at what we're talking about here. The general class of hormone receptor is called receptor tyrosine kinases, RTKs. This is a class of receptor that in conjunction with the kinds of intracellular messages it produces has very powerful impact on growth and development. Much of what you are is because of these RTKs responding to the right hormone at the right time in your development. Okay? Receptor is outside the cell. The kinase is inside the cell. And here's an interesting thing, ladies and gentlemen. Once it dimerizes, the kinases mutually phosphate each other. All right, so most RTKs, there is an important exception, are monomers prior to ligand binding. Upon ligand binding, and I'm repeating what I did from the previous slide, that's not an accident. Upon ligand binding, dimerization occurs along with autophosphorylation of interior portions of the receptor. Autophosphorylation, that means that the receptor phosphorylates its partner. Puts a big old hairy phosphate on that protein. Now, not big old hairy. Phosphates are neither big nor hairy, but they do exist. And they do phosphorylate each other. So, let's see. RTKAs include a wide variety of receptors. Let's pause here. Hit the pause button for a second. Let's take a look here. So, here is, essentially, this is the insulin receptor. This is not common that it automatically is a dimer already. But there is a portion that of the receptor that exists outside the cell, inside the cell, penetrates through the cell. As a ligand binds here, the conformational change is transmitted through the cell membrane, and these two portions begin to approach each other and then phosphorylate each other. Not at the same point, but at different points, but as they phosphorylate each other, you get a big old phosphate sitting down in here somewhere, and there are proteins within the cell that note the presence of that newly synthesized phosphate and bind to it and trigger a whole cascade of actions that are occurring within the cell. Receptors can be constructed of cassettes that are reused over and over. You know, I've forgotten to... this has got a big long line. Let's take a look at this. Now, so before I go through this abbreviation list, I want to look at this list. These are all RTKs, except for the insulin-like growth factor here, all exist as monomers. But they will bind together as a dimer when a ligand comes in here and binds to it. But I want you to note something. There are pieces of these protein, exterior pieces of the protein, that are repeated in a variety of other receptors. There is a piece called CRD that you find here in both IGF and EGFR. You find this AB fragment. You find it in RET, FGF, and these others. So they end up taking a small number of, shall we say, subunits and connecting together in different patterns that eventually make a complete receptor that then binds to a specific ligand. All right, well, let's go ahead and see what these abbreviations are. First, of course, is HGFR, human growth factor receptor. Next is EGFR, epithelial growth factor. Then you get IGF, insulin-like growth factor, insulin-like IGF. Then you have PDGF, platelet-derived growth factor, platelet-derived growth factor. FGF, fibroblast growth factor. VEGF, VEGF, vascular endothelial growth factor. Okay, and let's see here. RTK, tropomyosin, TRK, Tropomyosin receptor kinase, ignore the fact that it's underlined. That's not significant at all. It's just tropomyosin receptor kinase. EFPHR, efferin receptor. This is a fairly, the bottom three are fairly obscure. Obscure in the fact that their details are not going to be that helpful in this level of class. But certainly the VEGF, the PDF, PDGF, these are important growth factors that are circulating currently in your blood and are have specific receptors for them. For those of you who are, for example, let's see, VEGF. Let's say you are, anybody here do you think is still growing in size? Still growing in size, anybody? Getting taller? Feet? Your feet are still getting bigger? Sometimes? Okay. Well, my son is, Daniel is, he's 20. He could conceivably continue to be growing. But for the last couple of years, he started to slow down. But every inch of growth has had to be accompanied by increased capillary beds to supply the oxygen in that tissue. The capillary bed is stimulated to grow by VEGF, vascular endothelial growth factor. That's a protein that binds to the receptor, yes.
You said that when you use steroids, you only need micrograms in order to have a large effect on the body.
Correct.
In terms of the other natural hormones, is it the same scale or are they larger or lesser scales?
Typically, the protein ones are a little larger. I mean, the most potent ones are the steroidal-based hormones. But we're not talking, but we're still talking about, we're not in micrograms, but we're in tens of micrograms by tenth of a milligram kind of size. Certainly for some of these, it doesn't take much. And sometimes they're produced locally. And so at the local level, the concentration is relatively high, but as it circulates throughout the body, you'd have a hard time detecting it. So it's all over the place. So you'll need to be able to tell me what these mean, what these are, okay? What they are. Are we going to be able to go into some of the physiology of it? Unfortunately not. But you need to know and feel confident about, when you see this list, I want you to think of what class? Receptor tyrosine kinases. What's its three-letter abbreviation? RTKs, and they normally exist as monomers, and they only dimerize when they bind ligand. And when they bind a ligand, what do they do in the interior? Well, they phosphate. All right, cellular internal transmission of external signal. This is called the RAS cascade. This is a very common and well-known cascade inside the body that has to deal with development issues, especially. You are what you are because of the RAS cascade. Let's take a look at what happens. It begins with an RTK. Again, what does an RTK stand for? Which exists normally with an unbound ligand as a what? Monomer. When the ligand bounds, the two form a dimer, which conformationally changes inside, and then the interior of the receptor becomes what? Phosphorylated. And we see that right here. That Y is the single-letter abbreviation for what amino acid? What's the name of this receptor, RTK? What's the name of it? Tyrosine kinase. So guess what that kinase is acting on? Tyrosine. So it puts a phosphate on that tyrosine. Well, we got to go, ladies and gentlemen. The end. This is just fascinating stuff. Please read your text. We'll see you tomorrow. Have a great day.
And Now, we invite you to relax. Let us pull up a chair as the dining room proudly presents your dinner. Be our guest. Be our guest. Put our service to the test. Tie your napkin round your neck, Cherie, and we provide the rest. Soup du jour, hot hors d'oeuvre. Why, we only live to serve. Try the gray stuff. It's delicious. Don't believe me? Ask the dishes. They can sing, they can dance. After all, miss, this is France. And a dinner here is never second best. Go on, unfold your menu. Take a glance and then you'll be our guest. We our guest, be our guest. Beef ragout, cheese souffle, pie and pudding on flambé. We'll prepare and serve with flair a culinary cabaret. You're alone and you're scared, but the banquet's all prepared. No one's gloomy or complaining while the flatware's entertaining. We tell jokes, I do tricks with my fellow candlesticks.
Put it all in perfect taste that you can bear.
Come on and lick your glass, you want your own.
If you're stressed, it's fine dining we suggest.
Be our guest, be our guest, be our guest.
Life is so unnerving for a servant who's not serving. He's not whole without a soul to wait upon. Ah, those good old days when we were useful. Suddenly those good old days are gone. 10 years we've been rusting, needing so much more than dusting, needing exercise, a chance to use our skills. Most days we just lay around the castle. Flabby, fat, and lazy, you walked in and oops-a-daisy!
It's a guest, sakes alive, and I'll be blessed. Wine's important, thank the Lord, I bet the napkin's freshly pressed. With this suit, she'll want tea, and my dear, that's fine with me. While the cups do this, I'll shoo it, I'll be bubbling, I'll be brewing. I'll get warm, I'll be hot. Heaven's sakes, is that a spot? Clean it up, we want the company impressed. We've got a lot to do, is it one love for? You are guests.
She's our guest.
She's our guest.
She's our guest.
Sing you off to sleep as you digest. Tonight you'll rock your.